As parents, our aim is to nurture and guide, but sometimes without realizing it, we might use manipulation tactics when disciplining. These tactics often negatively impact behavioral outcomes in children. Today, we're unpacking what some of these tactics are, how they affect children, and most importantly, how we can foster healthy, open communication with our children. Let's start with revision of reality. Revision of reality is a form of emotional manipulation where the facts and events are twisted or downplayed. Let's say Sam becomes very upset with his teenager, Alex, for not cleaning his room, leading to a heated argument. During the argument, Sam shouts, "You never listen to me or do anything I ask." A few days later, when discussing the argument with another family member, Alex recalls Sam shouting. However, Sam interjects saying, "I never raised my voice, and I certainly didn't say you never do anything I ask. You're just too sensitive and exaggerating things." In this example, Sam is outright denying their actions and words, despite Alex's clear memory of the event. This manipulative tactic attempts to make Alex question his memory and perception of the incident. In this scenario, Sam should have admitted what happened and said, "Yes, I yelled at you, we did have an argument, I want to talk about this with you." It doesn't mean that what Alex says in return is going to be necessarily factually correct, because teenagers and young children see the world very differently and they're more prone to reacting than to be proactive. Yes, they can be infuriating and frustrating. Then some of them think they know it all. My son went through that teenage phase. He's 22 years old now. I fully understand how it feels to have a teenager and to be tired and frustrated. But if you shut down what he is saying, as Sam did with Alex, you are closing the door to communication, and it is a manipulation tactic. It's, "Let's sweep this under the rug. Let's forget about it. Let's not talk about this. I don't want to deal with this." The solution in this scenario is communication and strong leadership. If Sam opens the door to communication, he is showing leadership. He's admitting what happened, but he's also telling his side of the story. That's strong leadership. Hiding away and saying, "You're exaggerating, be quiet, that never happened," is not leadership. That's very much the opposite of it. They're not going to respect you for that. They will respect you when you show strong leadership. Opening the door to communication is showing strong leadership. Avoidance will lead to manipulation. Alex needs better communication from Sam in this scenario. Alex isn't going to be the one to do it because he's a child. He needs to be taught how. We're going to have a look at emotional overload. Emotional overload is used to sway behavior. It leads to confusion, stress, and impaired communication in children. Whether you realize it or not, emotional overload is a manipulation tactic. I had a parent tell me one of the biggest lessons that he's learned from my materials is that he often brings bazookas to toothpick fights. I found that analogy quite funny, but it's true. It pays to be aware of the ways that you communicate with your child, because how you handle your own frustration and upset is teaching them how to do that themselves. Here is an example. A parent frustrated with their child's messy room starts yelling and crying, saying, "You never listen to me. I do everything for you and I get nothing back. You don't care about anyone but yourself. You're selfish. Why are you doing this to me?" This intense emotional display is obviously intended to make the child clean their room, because the parent is frustrated. "Why is my child doing this to me? Why aren't they listening to me? Why are they attacking me in this way?" It can feel very personal when your child is misbehaving. Pushing the boundaries is normal behavior. They will refuse to listen. They will say no. They will talk back to you. They will scream and shout and say, "I hate you." They are not doing this to you because they dislike you as a parent or because you're a bad parent. Every child does this to their parents. Your child isn't doing this to you. They are behaving this way because their brains and biology is making them do this, and that's where they need strong leadership. If you throw your service back in their face, you are leading them to feel guilty over something they cannot control. It's just like saying, this is my house, but it's your child's house as well. Where else are they going to go? What other house are they going to live in? When you use emotional overload to throw your service back in their face, it's fracturing your bond, it's creating confusion, it's making them feel guilty over something they cannot control. When you say, I do everything for you, you are expecting them to understand at a mature level of awareness. Being grateful requires self-awareness. It also requires experience in the world to compare it to. Kids have a limited ability to look introspectively. They have a limited self-awareness. It's growing as they grow. We can only be grateful as adults because we have something previously that we can compare it to. Your child can't compare their current situation to anything else because this is all they have known. They can't be grateful for something they have no other experience in. As young teens, they will be grateful for you having their back. They will be grateful for you being a trustworthy person that they can go to at any time. They will be grateful for having somebody who is emotionally safe, someone who they can trust, someone who they can confide in, who isn't going to tell their secrets to the entire family. Use strong leadership and you will breed gratefulness in them. Gratefulness doesn't come by telling someone to be grateful. It has to come from inside of them. It can't be forced on the outside. In the above scenario, nothing gets resolved and everyone feels intense pressure and stress. Using emotional overload is not leadership, and it will only backfire and make their behavior a lot worse. When someone feels stress, think of it as building up. The stress has to be released somewhere, and it's often directed at you. Emotional overload is a covert manipulation tactic that must be brought into the light. We must look within and be willing to change if we want a better future for our children. Let's look at one of the last manipulation tactics that I'm going to be talking about in this episode. This one is called negging. Negging is a form of emotional manipulation whereby an individual gives a compliment followed by an insult. Let's say a parent tells their child, you're smart, but I guess you're just not smart enough to figure out math like your sister. Maybe if you tried harder, you'd be able to understand it. Using a backhanded compliment to motivate the child undermines their confidence and self-esteem. The child isn't going to hear the compliment or think that your compliment is genuine. In fact, when someone does that, the compliment isn't genuine. It's just used as a manipulation tactic to try and soften the criticism of what they want to say. There are other ways to help and motivate a child who isn't that good at math. You don't need to criticize and compare them to another child. I think nagging is like one of the worst forms of emotional manipulation because it can be done subtly. It's like giving you a hug and then slapping you with the same hand. It is very confusing for children when they experience this from their caregivers. They don't know what to do with this information. Here are some more examples of negging. After a child wins a local art contest, the parent says, that's great, but imagine if you actually spent more time on it, you could do better. Maybe the parent is saying that because they think they're motivating the child. This is a backhanded compliment. This is backing up a compliment with a criticism. If you want to help your child spend more time on their art, you could say that at a separate time. In this situation, the child just won a local art contest and this person is criticizing and complimenting in the very same sentence. It is very manipulative. It doesn't matter how flowery or how sweet your child hears, I am not good enough. My mom or my dad doesn't think that I am good enough. That's all they hear, and it rings in their head like a bell that keeps going off. I'm not good enough, or that wasn't good enough. It can lower their self-esteem, it can fracture your bond, and it can make them feel that they're just never going to live up to your standards. Here are some more examples. You're pretty smart for someone who spends time on video games. Imagine if you read books instead. That's starting an argument right there. Get ready for a fight, because if you wanted one, you're definitely going to get one. Instead of saying, you're pretty smart for someone who spends time on video games, imagine if you read books instead, you could sit down with your teenager and ask them what they like about video games. Why are they spending time on video games? What is it that they are getting from it? Sit down and play some video games with them. Let them teach you what they see. The goal in this is to understand from your child's perspective, to put yourself in their shoes and try to understand how they are thinking. When you can understand from their perspective and how they are thinking and their thought process, then you can interject and say, I'm glad you're wanting to meet more people. How about I take you to Boy Scouts or something once a week, and then you can meet people in real life? Or how about I take you to a Pokemon trading club or something like that, where you can meet other kids face to face? My son particularly was very interested in video games, and where I lived, we had a very small store. In the back, they had computers where you can do battles with other people, play video games. My son wanted to play video games because he was interested in the challenge, and some of these video games are very challenging. I saw that he was very smart. He wanted something that would really push him to his limits and something that he could constantly overcome. That's what he was getting from these games. He also wanted the social interaction he was getting from other players. Then I would take him to these clubs, and the great thing is, because he got out of the house, he got to meet other people, he increased his social connections, and was doing something that he enjoyed at the same time. That's how you can help your child and encourage them to do different things. Ask them what they are getting out of it. Perhaps they're just bored and they don't have anything else to do, and now it's become a habit. Watch their behavior and be a little bit of a detective. Have a look at what they're actually getting from these things. Then you will be better equipped to help them from a leadership position, rather than using an emotional tactic like negging to try and get what you want from them. Let's look at some more examples of negging. After a child spends hours on homework, the parent remarks, "You finally finished? I guess you're not as quick as your classmates, but maybe you should work on your speed." In this case, maybe the parent is trying to encourage the child to go a little bit faster. "Oh, look what your friend is doing. They finished in an hour. You spent hours doing it." All they hear is, "I'm not good enough." Let's have a look at the next one. "Your cousin always gets straight A's and plays sports. It's interesting how different you two are, considering you barely pass and don't do much else." I've heard this a lot from grandparents. My own grandparent used to say things like this. I always thought that my cousin was like this perfect person. And then I saw my grandmother interact with my cousin and realize she's doing the same thing to my cousin as well. She's making us both feel terrible and comparing us to everybody else. Don't compare your child to their sibling, to yourself, to anyone. Your child's success is determined by their own baseline. As a teacher, that is what made a difference in my classroom. I was teaching a variety of children that had different needs. Some had ASD, some had ADHD, some just had basic learning difficulties. And what I did with every single one of them is I judged them on their baseline, not at what I expected them or what their parent expected them. When a child first started with me, I would record all of their baselines and give them very simple little tests, and I would make notes of it, and then I would approach the parent saying, "You want them to be like this person in the class, but this person in the class is much more advanced for whatever reason, and your child is at this level. Let's look at your child's baseline and let's work from there." It's never a healthy thing to compare a child to everybody else around them. They should be competing with their best self, their self yesterday, because comparison in that context can demotivate a child, and all they hear is, "I'm not good enough." What happens is that you shut the door to communication, they shut down, behavior gets worse. Let's have a look at another one. A parent watches their child preparing a simple meal and comments, "Are you sure you can handle that? Last time you tried, it was barely edible. Maybe stick to something a bit more simple." They're not going to hear anything encouraging out of that. They're going to hear, "I'm simple, I'm not smart, I can't do it." Negging makes a child feel unworthy. It reduces their trust in you, and that's a major thing, because without trust, you don't have any kind of relationship. It shuts the door to communication. It doesn't open it. It demotivates them. A lot of children will take that internally, and it will come out in their behavior. They will either go very quiet and just won't talk to you and shut themselves in their room all the time, or they may lash out at you and be more willing to fight with you. What they are crying out for is strong leadership. I'm coming from a place of being in a position as a child, having these emotional manipulation tactics done to me throughout my entire childhood. I thought that I was stupid for a very long time. I ended up surrounding myself with friends who would reinforce that narrative. They would pat me on the head and say, "You should have been born blonde. You're not very smart." I didn't see it as anything else but the norm, because that's all I grew up with. It took a very long time as an adult to get out of it. You really don't want to be doing that to your child. The stress has to go somewhere. It builds up and you get sick of it. You can't take it anymore. You just want to get away from feeling constantly that you're not good enough, that nothing you do is ever going to be right, that you're not ever living up to these ever-changing goalposts and imaginary standards of your parent. I believe that majority of parents don't realize they are doing it. They don't understand how negative it is, how it impacts their child's development, and how it impacts their future relationship as they grow up and become adults. I'm going to finish up this episode by talking about defensive coping. These are one of the outcomes that could happen as a result of using these manipulation tactics when disciplining your child. I need to preface this by saying defensive coping can occur without a parent using emotional manipulation tactics, but this is also a very likely outcome. Defensive coping is a common response to stress. It is designed to protect someone from unpleasant emotions like anxiety and guilt. What do defense mechanisms defend against? Above all else, defense mechanisms shield the individual from the emotional discomfort elicited by stress, such as anxiety. They're feeling emotional discomfort, and a defensive coping mechanism is a way to help them be shielded from that, to help them eliminate the stress, because they don't have the communication skills they need to relieve that stress or that anxiety. Defensive coping is an unconscious process that becomes an automatic response. It's unconscious. It's a response to a stimuli in the environment. This is called a maladaptive coping strategy. Next time your child is defensive, understand that the behavior is a maladaptive coping strategy. They're not doing it deliberately. They're not trying to hurt you or get at you. They have adapted as an evolutionary adaptation, as a response to their environment, to cope with stress and cope with the feelings they're having. That's why I say in all of my resources, especially the Ultimate Guide to Disciplining Without Damage for Every Age ebook, is that we need to look beyond the behavior. This is how you can look past the behavior. You may see a child as being defensive and think, "You're stubborn." Maybe the child isn't stubborn. They're using defensive coping mechanisms because they have stress and anxiety that they don't know what to do with, and they don't have the communication skills to deal with it any other way.